All right, welcome in. What is going on? We are here for a special segment of Benzinga's Cannabis Insider with the one, with the only Argentinian action figure, head of Benzinga Cannabis Content and News Desk himself, Javier Jase. My friend, what's up?
Doing great. How are you, Mr. Elliot Lane?
I'm running out of breath giving you an intro. I got to shorten that up a little bit. But this is an exciting show.
When you said it's a special show, I thought you meant because of our guest, not because of me.
You're special too. Our guest is incredibly special, and I'm not going to lie, okay. Probably a little cooler than both of us.
The guest. No one cares about us. The credits.
I'm pumped. Let's do it. I'm very excited. But Aaron Thomas, get us started. Javi, a very eventful week. I will say, you know, we're not going to cover a ton of news today, y'all, but we are interviewing the one and only U.S. Representative Dave Joyce today, a Republican from Ohio who has been serving his country for a decade now, or more than a decade, as a U.S. representative. Thrilled to have him on the show. A lot of topical news for us to chat about. But first and foremost, we've had a full week of earnings. So I do recommend everybody check out Benzinga.com/cannabis. Javi and his amazing team of writers cover 30 articles a day, if not more. But we've had some major companies announce. We had TerrAscend, Jason Wild & Co. announced late yesterday. We've had some analyst notes from Stifel, Roth, and the like that we covered on the site today. We had Village Farms. We've had Truly. We've had Verano. We've had Jushi. The list goes on. So make sure you check out either Cannabis Daily Podcast and or all of Cannabis News. But Javi, are you ready for an awesome conversation, man?
I am. Did you say Republican and cannabis? Let's hear all about it.
I feel like we're about to get debunked. I'm so excited for this. But with that being said, the man, the legend himself, Representative Dave Joyce, let's bring him on over 18. Representative Joyce, thank you so much for joining us. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you guys for having me on.
Oh, we're thrilled to have you. Where are you calling in from today? Are you in D.C. or are you back home in Ohio?
I just got home this morning. We got out late last night. And I caught the first flight home this morning. So here in the kitchen of
of the Joyce resident. Is it a relief? Do you like take a breath every time you get to go back to your home state a little bit? Is it just the pressure kind of releases?
Yeah, you know, it's as I said, back to the land of common sense.
without further ado, I'd like us to jump in a little bit. I think I was correct. You've been serving Ohio since 2012?
Correct.
When did the cannabis start for you? I mean, how long have you been advocating for cannabis on a legislative side?
Well, you know, it's interesting. For 25 years before this, I was a prosecuting attorney, an elected official prosecutor. And so I'd say my career really started more in that end of it, too, because I was one of the first people, let me back up even more. I was the public defender before I got appointed the prosecutor, because the prosecutor I like to judge. And so the cops didn't trust me anyhow. So then when I started to say, we're not going to take these busts that they would get, they were on grants, and grants needed stats. So they'd go behind the bar, they'd watch four people come out, get in the car, give it about 2 minutes, and then go get them. And it was a four-for, right? they'd get the weed, they'd get the people, and they'd have four numbers as well as a grant. And so I said, we're not taking any more of those. And so the cops are like, well, what do you mean? I said, just dump it and ask them where they got it from, and then dump it, and then let them go. And then once we start to get the same name consistently, then we'll start to focus on the person who's actually doing this. And usually that led to other drugs and not just cannabis. But so after a while, they started to see that this works. And all of a sudden, they started playing in much bigger ponds by going after people who were importing kilos of coke and things like that and LSD. And so when I first got to Congress, I already came in with this sense that, we were wasting law enforcement time and resources on cannabis. And so one of the first times it came up for me, I'm in a hearing, I'm on appropriations, and the subcommittee It was a Democrat from California who was making a passionate case about how wrong it is for VA hospitals in California, which was medically illegal at the time, not to be able to prescribe it to veterans. And I thought he made a damn good case. So I voted with him, the lone Republican. And I was quickly summoned down to Speaker Boehner's office, where he's like, "What the hell are you doing?" And I went through the thing and I said, "Well, John, here's the blah, blah, blah." And I said, "Besides, I think it's a states' rights issue." He goes, "Yeah, that's fine. Don't do it again."
Look how times have changed.
Yeah. Oh, thank God they are. Boehner
is also on board with this.
Right. And so,
how does that process work? Do you influence each other, or is it more of a social thing, right? Is it something that changes with the times and society, or do you feel that even within, you know, the confines of DC, you're influencing each other and your opinions?
Well, you know, the one thing that's in short supply in DC is people who listen. You know, everybody's an expert, so they don't want to talk. But I mean, you listen to the other members and listen to where they're coming from, a lot of them have some pretty good ideas. So, you know, on this one, and especially as a Republican speaking out, you can imagine that like Earl Blumenauer and some other folks are starting to say, hey, you know, if you have an interest in this, here's where we're at. And so I finally, it's around, I don't know, maybe 2 years later, I said, yeah, you know, I have an interest, but, you know, I want to be involved in it. Don't bring me a bill that, you know, it's all settled. Let's work together. And I could see it coming because you could see state by state doing it. And when Colorado went fully legal and you saw the tax revenue they got the first month, you know, what governor is going to walk away from a fount of cash like that, right? And the other thing is that, you know, it's good for us in that, you know, law enforcement can focus on the targets that they need, get out of this. And now, since it's coming of age and where more states are going legal, and certainly in Ohio here, it's medicinally legal, you know, 47 states now have in some way, shape, or form, it's time for the federal government to get real about it and get the hell out of the way of the system. And there's easy ways to do this. And I think, you know, you all follow this closely. So you've seen some of my other bills like SAFE and HOPE and PREPARE that I put together trying to put some regulatory framework over the industry.
Let me do one quick follow-up, right? Yesterday I was on a podcast being interviewed by Advisor Shares, and we were discussing how, you know, the key arguments that move the needle for policymakers, and the consensus seems to be that what moves the needle the most, as you also mentioned, is money, right? Do you see other arguments being made moving the needle in the direction of legalization, right? Like down here in Argentina, the thing that pushed legalization the most were mothers advocating for their children, right? Like maybe in America, it's veterans. Well, like what do you feel are the strongest arguments, or is it, you know, really money, the one that ultimately tilts the scale?
Yeah, that's a good point. There are other things out there. The money aspect was just a red flag for me, because you could just see it, you know, for governors. And the other side of it is that you're in the course of putting it and making it plus revenue, you're also taking the revenue you're expending and trying to go after it off the table as well, and eliminating the illegal market, you know, so you want to focus it. And then you give advent to things like fentanyl and the potential for cannabis being laced. Then, you know, that I think that drives folks too, because they don't want to see, all right, since they're going to have it, let's make sure we're driving it to folks where they know what they're procuring at a dispensary is going to be what exactly what the similar to what they had in California or Colorado or Ohio. So I think there's a lot of things that are helping drive it. You had Ryan Mast on before. He's a great veterans issue. I mean, who's going to take issue with him, Brian, when he makes the case for it? You have law enforcement folks who make the case for it. And certainly more and more people, I think, will get in line to pass something when they see it's actually moving. A lot of people aren't willing to put their name out there ahead of it until they actually know it's going to keep moving, like SAFE.
Mm-hmm. Amen. And I do want to dive into SAFE momentarily. Sure. But before that, to Javi's point, just a quick follow-up. At our Miami Cannabis Capital Conference in mid-April, we had representatives... we love having you there and Chicago, September 27th and 28th. just a quick plug. But we had Representatives Troy Carter from Louisiana and Representative Dean Phillips from Minnesota. And Representative Phillips made a very interesting point about the industry to really move forward needs to create more of one unified voice. And I'm curious, you know, to your thoughts, your reaction to that, and what that means to you.
Yeah, it's a good point. The trouble is, my good friend Brady Cobb always says, we're the only industry that comes to see you guys that wants to be taxed and regulated. That's absolutely right.
He's got a point. He's got a point.
And, you know, the funny part about it is that you have so many people coming from so many different, you know, whether it's they have the retail end of it, or you know, you get the people who in Ohio say they won the lottery by getting themselves a dispensary location. And so therefore, you know, their interests are maybe different than somebody who's coming into it who's a multi-state operation. And so it's conflicting for folks. And I think that, you know, to organize is one voice to say, these are the things we want to get. And what I try to do is be fair with folks by saying, this is moving at in a town that moves at a glacial pace, this is really moving quickly. And so we need to continue to work together and just put realistic guidelines and goalposts up here so everybody knows what's going on. And obviously, being a new market, and Javi, you know, since you watch the markets, I guess you know that something can move the market. We don't want to be in the process of trying to move the market and not be realistic about it, not tell people where, you know, this is what's going to happen. And I feel very confident about SAFE this time around, where, you know, while I felt good, I'd been around the game long enough to know that we were running out of runway at the end of last session and that the Senate wasn't going to be able to land. Bring that plane in. So, you know, but the good part is it's teed things up for this session. So I really think there was some positive things are going to move on it. I was honored to see the hearing yesterday over in the Senate with my senator, Sherrod Brown, who didn't really come to the game enamored with it, but has since come around after he's got an opportunity to see what's going on in the state and talk to people who are actually in the industry and realize that, you know, how important it is to get something like this accomplished.
I mean, you really started the conversation for me, so thank you. And I was going to ask, because, you know, I was speaking with a person who's worked on Capitol Hill, worked there for 10 years, and this person was saying that in comparison with other industries that have needed federal reform, this is on pace, you know, timeline-wise. You know, I know cannabis somewhat need something to happen soon. There's a lot of pressure on small businesses, as you all know, and I'm sure are well aware with people are in your ear about that, as they should be. But, you know, I'm curious, you know, Representative Joyce, from your end, is this moving quickly for you? And is there a path forward on the same timeline for the House as we're expected for the Senate now, which is somewhere in September?
Well, the one thing about the House this time, and I know it looked like a lot of confusion before Kevin took over, but that was actually sort of a healthy process because now we're all meet and talk and work things through. And the thing is you want to do is work it through what they call regular order. In other words, the committees of jurisdiction, such as financial services with Chairman McHenry, let them have the hearing like Sherrod was doing over in the Senate yesterday with it. So industry people could come in and tell them what their problems are, you know, that you bring in folks who have been robbed. You have the people, you know, governmental agencies. I remember Secretary Mnuchin, who I have some pretty good banter with, and he'd say, you know, it's our duty to fix the problem. I said, yeah, I agree. And he was telling us about that, you know, the IRS had to build cash rooms because, you know, people are coming to legitimately pay their tax, but since they don't have a bank, they got to bring cash. And guess what? The government welcomes it with open arms, right? If you brought $10,000 to buy a new car, you'd immediately trigger a SARS, a suspicious activity report. But not when you come to the federal government to pay your taxes. The state government, you're more than welcome. Come on in. That's absurd. I mean, that's the kind of absurdity we want to get out of this program and start to get back. Letting banks, you know, get involved in this. It's not Goldman Sachs that's itching to get in this business. It is the community banks. It's your credit unions. It's your local folks who understand a local business and the local business people working through it and are going to continue to process that banking, you know, as banks normally do, stimulate the local economy with the funds that are there and know their customers and know their clients. That's what we're trying to get. It makes it a cleaner approach for everybody involved and it allows them to write a check at the end of the day. Guess what? To their employees, to their providers, to their government for their taxes, and allows credit card access and all those things that come with being a legitimate state-run concern.
You know, you're talking a lot about taxes, and as we regularize the situation with taxing cannabis companies, what do you envision America doing with this money, right? That is has been one of the top discussions, right? Like, there's a lot of money that could go to taxes to fund X, Y, and Z. What do you envision it helping with?
Well, you know, one of the things that I saw, we're not fooling each other. The war on drugs was based on the backs of low income and African and you know, people of color. So that's where I came up with the idea in trying to think this thing through with my tremendous team of Amanda and Anna. We're saying, okay, how can we help folks? And that's where we came up the idea with my friend Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, where she the idea of doing the HOPE Act, allow this revenue to get put back into the stream to provide impetus for states to grant expungements. Because you talk to folks who are in the industry, they say, we'd like to hire them, but the state law doesn't let us. You know, the regulations they're working under doesn't let them. They can't get bank loans. They can't be part of the industry. They can't get public housing or mortgages or other things because of these prior convictions. Let's find a way to wipe that out. Let's find incentivize the state's attorneys to actually get involved and create an expungement process that's fair. Because you and I both know it costs you $2,500 to go to your attorney to get an expungement, guess what? You ain't paying the $2,500, so you'll still keep continuing the conviction. If you make it process where it's free, first thing you go down to their local court for courts, fill out the form, put it in, and it's in 6 months, either they grant it or it's deemed granted because they don't want to go through the record check to find this thing, or they don't have the records. I mean, if it occurred in the 80s or 90s, it's not in a system somewhere. But the person can go on with life and so not have to feel that they have to register or put down every time they fill out a bank application that they have a prior conviction. So it's important things that you use it to take care of folks. You also use it for help for veterans who do need access, who can't afford it, or other areas. I mean, this is while it can be a source of revenue for the government and folks see it that way, I also think that we have to put it back into the communities in which it's come from, or that the taxes have been levied, if you will, upon them for over the ages.
Amen. You mentioned the HOPE Act. I'd like to ask your opinion. We've heard Senator Schumer say multiple times over the past week that he intends to add expungement and perhaps some other initiatives to the bill after it exits the Safe Bank or the Senate Banking Committee. Mm-hmm. Do you expect HOPE to be that which he adds? Do you have any insights into what else could be a part of that bill?
Well, Senator Schumer is been a wonderful partner in this process. I wouldn't tell him how to run the Senate. I don't know where it's going to go, but I figure he's going to be similar to the House, where all of these are going to have to run through regular order, through their committees of jurisdiction, and then get to the floor and allow people to weigh in on it if we're going to put this together in a way that's going to be secure moving forward. Because the one thing you don't want, guys, as you can appreciate, is in what we see play out, Dems are in charge. You know, we're going to do more. You're not going to do it. You know, they came out with this great thing. You know, we passed it. It's a monumental day. But if it doesn't get through the House and it doesn't get through the Senate and the president doesn't sign it, it doesn't mean a damn thing. So let's work in concert to finally get to where we need to go. And that's what I think. This longer term strategy, like I said earlier, putting realistic goals and goalposts out there is more important for all of you in the industry so you can plan effectively.
Absolutely. And then thinking about what has historically perhaps worked against cannabis when it comes to other lobbying, outside lobbying groups, right? It's not totally clear, you know, to the cannabis industry, nor is there like a TV show saying this person is lobbying against this person, right? We don't necessarily know. The assumption for the longest time was pharma. And then I guess over maybe the past 6 to 12 months, we've started to understand how much the alcohol industry really could be playing a part in the path forward for the cannabis space. And I'm curious, to what you can say. This is my first time talking about lobbying with a U.S. representative, so perhaps educate me a little
disclosure.
Bit on that.
It's all public disclosure. Whatever corporations spend on lobbying is public record.
So I'm curious. Is there any movement with lobbying currently against what's happening with cannabis in the U.S. Congress?
You know, it's interesting. I wouldn't say there's people lobbying against it. I'd say there's interest groups, similar to your Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. You have folks here who, there's a lot of mothers, especially older people, who don't want it to happen because they always heard about this being a gateway drug, right? And so if we do this, then, that's going to lead down a spiraling staircase to hell. And so the attitude has changed as the age has changed, but there's still the attitude. And most people, and especially staff folks, are not going to want their member to walk into something that could possibly be detrimental to them at home. And so that's why it takes talking to them and inviting them. And the industry has been fantastic about this, is say, take when your member's home, invite them to an operation, to a grow operation, to a dispensary, to processing. Let them see firsthand. Let them see how it's clinically done. This isn't, three dudes in the woods. This is a really a detailed operation. And the idea that they now know from seed to sale exactly what is being grown, the amounts that are being grown, the costs that are involved. And so when you know that in like Ohio, where the numbers are set on what they can, how much can be sold and how much it's going to cost, you when the money arrives at the bank, you'll have a better idea of the details of of legitimate operations. And that helps argue against the cartel aspect. Oh, this is just going to let cartels into it. And that's, we know that's not true, but then as, the National Sheriff's Association or the prosecuting attorneys, and that was my mistake the first time through. I didn't reach out and encompass them. And so I'm sitting in a hearing and I see everybody else at the table with something from the Sheriff's Association that they're reading from. And I don't have one in my setting. I just realized I got outworked at my own bill. And the next time around, I made a point of it. Anna and Amanda and I brought in the Prosecutors Association. What do you want to see in it? What don't you like about it? The Sheriff's Association. And, tell us what your the part of it is. And what I've got. And now, like my local cops who work a lot of times at these operations in their off hours because they need people for law enforcement, for security reasons, have them talk to their state agency that's saying that this is a bad thing, don't let it happen. So tell them, how does it work in your neighborhood? Tell these guys how they don't draw more criminals. They don't sell to school age kids as they're or hanging by the school bus drop to sell it. That these are legitimate. That's the kind of mentality that we need to clean up. That this is not just bringing the drug dealing to your neighborhood. This is legitimate going concerns.
This is a little bit off topic, but since we were discussing lobbying, I feel like most people don't understand how lobbying works, what it is, right? Mm-hmm. Because you tell people, okay, so companies are spending money, right, to lobby for certain things, right? And in the rest of the world, you say that and people go like, oh, they're paying bribes. And it's like, it is nothing like that. This is an institutionalized way to push certain policy forward or hold it back, right? But like, how does it work? Where does that money go when someone discloses they spent $2 million lobbying for or against something, right? How's that process? How does it look like?
That's a great point. To give you an idea that, when people come to me, a good lobbyist will know his issue. They're going to be driving in a lane that I've got, like appropriations, and I'm the chair of Homeland Security. They may have equipment that their company's trying to get into the system somehow, and they make a case for why they're more efficient, their technology's better, those type of things, and lay it out for you. And the ones, I think people get a bad idea. In the way I look at it is, you come into me, and I'm straight up with folks. Look, if I can help you, if it's a good product and it could be helpful and we could cut costs or be more efficient in what we're doing, those type of things, and we can be helpful, I'm glad to help you. And if I can't, I'll tell you this. so you can move on to somebody who might be more helpful or not. But you know, be straightforward with me, and I'll be straightforward with you. But the idea that these people are like waiting outside and there's some type of secret bribe, we've eliminated all that type of stuff. And you know, the biggest thing you can get now is you know, the donation that you might get, or invited to a great event like Benzinga, where you know, you get to meet all the inside folks and be able to ask questions directly from them and hear their stories of what's taking place. Those are important, but I really think that the best lobbying is done by, you know, local folks with their senator or their congressman when they're home in the district, because then you get to see it in application. Then you get to see that, you know, hey, this guy's got 250 people here at work every day that are paying taxes to the city. A mayor comes out, the mayor's like, oh, they've been a great business partner. They've been great here in the community. That again, those are the type of things I think that gets more folks involved in the system than paying people in D.C. just to come in who have never been to your town, who have never seen your thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as your average American, I choose to believe House of Cards and how they show lobbying. just kidding. Massive joke. JK, LOL. All that said, Representative Joyce, I do believe we have to wrap up. Your time is so appreciated today, and I hope we can have you on again as SAFE progresses, as HOPE progresses, as PREPARE progresses through these different bodies. We definitely want to keep up with you, and we appreciate what seems to be a positive sentiment from you for what's happening right now. So all that said, thank you so much. You're welcome back anytime should we be able to have you on.
Thank you guys very much. And since you brought it up, if you read PREPARE, that's my way of lobbying my the president, who might not really come to the party willingly, but allow everybody to have participation in this. Lay it out there. If and when it does become legal, this is what it would look like. And let everybody be able to talk about it ahead of time, so there's no surprises for anyone.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Representative Joyce. Appreciate you so much. Be well.
Thank you. Have a great day.
That was epic. That was epic. Really appreciate him joining. We got a lot of wonderful insights there. It was educational for me. And honestly, if I don't learn something in all these interviews, it's a waste of time. So much appreciate him. Javi, any thoughts?
No, this was awesome. Honestly, I'm ready to rewatch it.
I know. I do want to go check out PREPARE. Maybe we'll jump into that in our next episode, PREPARE Act, what's in there. And, you know, we touched on, I wanted to touch on the state of Ohio, because I think they are looking to go potentially vote on rec soon. I think they have enough signatures on the next ballot. So hopefully we can have him back on to chat about that. And hopefully we'll have our 24th recreational state if they're the next one to go, but that would be exciting. I know, right? Awesome. All right, so Javier, thank you so much. Representative Joyce, thank you so much. Appreciate everybody tuning in. Please share with your friends. There is positivity out there for this industry. It's not all doom and gloom, we promise you. That being said, we'll continue to bring you the news. BZCannabis.com to hit the next event. Representative Joyce, we definitely want you there speaking. We'll have a wonderful policy presence. But that is the place to meet investors. That is the place to meet the largest plant-touching companies in the industry, largest tech firms, and the best and top services around and up-and-coming brands. We grew 20% year over year from Miami 22 to Miami 23. It's my last plug of the day. But Javier, anything else you want to say before we hop off for the day?
Zinger.com/cannabis for your daily dose of cannabis news. That is it for us today. We'll see you again on Tuesday.
Tuesday it is. Thanks all. Peace. Peace.